Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
We're back.
Did we ever really leave?
We did. You left and went to Seattle, and I left and went to Phoenix.
Oh, well, I mean, the listeners don't need to know that.
We've always been here.
Yeah, I do not leave this chair if I can help it.
That's good. You've revealed everything about yourself now. Now we know
you're in a chair. I revealed nothing.
No, you're in a chair.
Or am I?
Oh.
So one of those weeks, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's accurate. One of those weeks. Travel, you know, it's nice to travel, but at the same time, you know, you come home and it's like, oh, like even staying connected. I you know, it's not like I'm not connected when I'm traveling, but I come back and the weight of all the stuff that I just said, well, I'm not dealing with this now because
sure,
I'm traveling,
yeah.
That is sitting there. It's like, oh, I got to deal with all those things that I didn't deal with the last 4 days.
Oh, I totally get that. I mean, earlier this week, I spent a day where I recorded 2 podcasts and edited 3 in the same day.
Huh.
I did not get any other work done that
no.
day. It's time consuming, that editing podcast thing.
Yes. You don't say.
Yeah, I hear. I hear. Rumor has it. No, it's interesting. Well, because when you go places and you want, especially if you're doing things with, you know, you're going places to, say, visit people, whether
yeah.
it be family or colleagues or whatever, you want to be engaged in whatever's
exactly.
going on there.
Exactly.
And so it's interesting because I think phones do tend to fill the dead space a lot better. Like when I was a kid, I used to bring a book everywhere. And mm-hmm. I would always have my nose in a book. But now
yeah.
that we have the, you know, the infinitely connected internet, I feel like there's never a moment where I cannot be entertained in some way or another.
Right. Well, I have that one with not having a traditional job anymore where I visit my mom, and that's which is what we did this time. And it's like, you know, the website's still going. People are still sort of expecting me to write things. And so what do I do? Like, Monday I had a podcast and then I wrote an article and then we had the afternoon. But yeah, you want to kind of scale it back when you're traveling. But at the same time, the world kind of pushes in a little bit. Well, you posted a lot of things today on our site.
Did I? Wow. I don't even remember now.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking here and you, so thanks for filling in for me while I was gone. Jeez. Yeah. Today you had a bunch of links. And then you wrote a thing about Screens 4, which I was
did.
Excited about. I got to check that out.
I'm pretty psyched about it. Screens 4.
Yeah, I was using Screens. So Screens is a screen sharing app for iOS, and I used the previous version. It's great to see that they've got better keyboard support in this one, because that was actually one of the things I was disappointed by, is using my iPad Pro with an external keyboard and connecting to a Mac via Screens. The keyboard was less useful than I had hoped it would be, because it's like, it should be perfect, right? Like, it's a little window into a Mac somewhere else that you can control. But I haven't tested it yet, but it sounds like it's better on that score. So
well, you as someone who works more from the iPad than I do, I will be interested to hear your impressions of that. We've talked a lot about working from the iPad, and I think we can say, without going into too much detail, one of the major things that was keeping me off doing more work on the iPad was the fact that for my personal writing, my fiction writing, I use Scrivener.
Yes.
And I think we can say legitimately that there is a beta of the iOS version of Scrivener, which has been worked on for
is.
A long time. I don't think we can say much about it in detail at the moment.
I think
but
all we can say is that we are both using the beta of Scrivener.
Yes, and it's great for me just because it removes one of the last remaining big obstacles for me to do my work from the iPad. Because
right.
while there were third-party apps that let you do, you know, sort of sync with Scrivener or possibly do some sort of editing, it was always a little bit jankier than if you had, you know, a solution that came from the Scrivener developers
yeah.
themselves.
I suppose we can also reveal that, yes, the iOS version of Scrivener does open Scrivener files. It does,
yeah.
sorry, it's not
completely siloed.
It is. It lets you do that. So, yeah, it'll be... Yeah, that's a good one. It's for everybody. Everybody who wants to use iPads more to do productive stuff. There's always different things that it's, you know, different apps for different people, but there's different things being unlocked. Like I saw Gruber linked to this new app that's a illustration app. It's a Bezier vector illustration app called Bez, which is very clever. And it's just one of those things like, okay, now there's a pro, you know, there's this brand new pro illustration app. And there are probably others for iOS too, but it's just, you know, here's another where if you're somebody who is using Adobe Illustrator on their Mac, you've got options on the iPad. Like, everybody's got that thing that they need, and they're all different for different people. But it's nice to see when they kind of pop up like that.
Right. Yeah. So it's interesting for me. I've tried spent a couple of days here and there trying to use more and be more iPad self-sufficient. And especially with some of the multitasking stuff, and the better keyboard support, that definitely makes it easier. Mm. I was out today at a coffee shop while I was waiting for my car to get fixed, and I saw somebody with an iPad Pro and a keyboard, keyboard using that. So, you know, they're around. There are people.
The big one
out there.
Or the little one?
The big one. And he had a pencil too. So he was like jotting notes and like going back and forth using the keyboard. And I was like,
super fancy person.
This is the future. This is the future. I guess. I guess it's the future.
I was going to write, thank you for allowing me to spend more time with my family, because I was going to write a thing about the Kindle Oasis, which got announced. And then I didn't have to because you wrote something on Six Colors about it. So thank you.
Well, there's probably more to say. I mean, I think you've used the Kindle and Kindles more than
all
I
have. Kindles, yeah. There's more to say.
Yeah, and I as I mentioned in the post, I just got a Paperwhite.
Yeah.
And so that has been an interesting experience for me, coming from a, I don't even know what generation, do I have like a fourth generation Kindle maybe? So I'm a little D-pad on it.
Oh, yeah.
And it was fine. It was cheap. I got it several years ago. It's lasted me quite some time. But it was just, I saw that the Paperwhite was on sale for one day last week.
Yeah. And it's not suspicious at all.
Yeah, exactly. And for me, the thing that got me, I mean, the backlight is certainly attractive as one feature. I think the sharper screen though, and really, really having used it after having used my fourth generation Kindle for so many years, it really is nicer. Like I, you know, sort of like stare at it and like peer at it really closely and like I feel like it looks much closer to real print to me.
Yeah, it's good. It's not perfect. I mean, hoping that the Oasis would have an upgraded screen, and it doesn't. It's the same 300 dpi screen
right
as on the Kindle Voyage, and I think on the Paperwhite.
Yeah, I think it's the same quality. It has different LED arrangements and some different, it uses like thinner screen technology. But I don't think it's not higher quality, I believe.
No. So, yeah, it's supposed to be better. You know, the lighting is supposed to be better on it. We hear whenever there's a Kindle, we hear from people who are like, why would I ever use that instead of an iPad? And it's like, you know, I've used the iPad. I use the new iPad Pro cranked up all the way with the lowest glare they've ever done on an iPad outside. And it's like, it's not like the text isn't readable, but it is not close. A backlit display with a backlit cranked up all the way. Outside, especially, that's really outdoors is where it matters. If you're at the pool, at the beach, something like that, versus a Kindle where it's reflective, it's like a piece of paper, it's just different screen technology. And the Kindle stuff just shines when it comes to being in a room with natural light. It feels natural, it's like reading a piece of paper and not like reading a computer screen. And for some people, that matters. I also like, well, I mean, I think you and I both saw some Twitter feedback about this yesterday, which was like, why wouldn't I do this? What are the advantages? And it's like, well, it's that. It has super long battery life. Mm-hmm. And the distractions, I think, is a huge thing, too. The Kindle is a single-purpose device. It's not going to push a notification saying you just got an email. It doesn't have a swipe away from a Twitter account. It's just none of that is there. It is for reading text. That's all.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me that the Kindle Oasis, you know, certainly you could have expected a higher-end Kindle, maybe it would veer away from that in some way, but really it didn't so much in terms of, like, you know, the reading experience probably on an Oasis is probably not hugely different from the reading experience on a Voyager Paperwhite, just from, I mean, certainly from a software perspective. And it's interesting, too, because the Oasis is a weird device in that way, because it's fairly much more expensive than those other two devices, certainly more than the Paperwhite, and I feel like does not necessarily, I don't know what the value proposition there is for, like, this is a sort of high-end version of the Kindle.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack about this. I got to think about it a little bit more. They're also bundling it with the case as opposed to having it be an option, so the price is way higher than the other ones, but you've got to factor in that you're also buying a battery case with it. Now, The downside of that is they don't sell it without the case. Maybe someday, but not right now. And so, you know, you have, if you want it, you got to go in for the whole package. And I've never bought the Amazon case before, just never. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what their strategy is here. I mean, it's sort of the only game in town, but Amazon knows there are people who love this thing, and a lot of tech savvy people sniff at this kind of product category because we're all on our iPhones and our iPads, and what's the point of a dumb old e-ink device? But there's actually a pretty great audience for this device, and some of those people, a lot of those people, are not tech savvy people either. They just want a book reader. It's the, you know, people who they and Amazon knows it. Amazon knows those people, and you know, when I went to a resort a year and a half ago, around the pool, it was, there were some iPads, yeah, but there were so many Kindles. It's just mind blowing how many Kindles there were. And not to, I just, again, it's a small sample size, but I will also tell you that the number of people using Kindles that I saw, the demographic there is, there are a lot more women than men, and there are a lot older people. And I'm not saying like they were all gray-haired retirees. It was, but it was, you know, people in their 40s and 50s and 60s who were using them. So it, you know, it's not necessarily a, like a lot of tech products, something that skews male and it skews young. And so, you know, I think so many people who talk about and complain about technology and whether it's cool or not are young people, and they're men, and they tend to be. And, you know, is the Kindle a cool category? No, it's not, but it has an audience. And I think with this product at this price, Amazon also knows it's got an audience, some of whom will spend whatever Amazon charges for a really good Kindle because they love it. And this really feels like that. The fact that they kept the Voyage and the Paperwhite in the product line too, it's like, you know, this is the deluxe Kindle. This is the fancy luxury car Kindle.
Yeah, exactly. And it looks very sleek. And I think, you know, some of the form factor rearrangements make sense.
They put the physical buttons back on after dalliance with first no page buttons and then the weird kind of squeeze vibrate page buttons.
Yeah. I actually don't, I'm trying to think, I've only been using the Paperwhite for a week or so. I don't really miss the, so my older Kindle had the little buttons on the side, like physical buttons. And those were fine. I don't really miss them, I think. I feel like I'm just as equally likely in both cases to accidentally go forward.
Yeah.
I think the only problem is on the touchscreen, sometimes I accidentally go forward like a couple pages if I'm not careful. But like, it doesn't make a huge difference for me. I like, it's very clean looking on the Paperwhite. I like that there's only basically one button on the thing. So I'm pretty happy. And the software is a huge improvement over my old.
Well, that's true. That's
software in the old Kindle is terrible.
They have made some improvements there. I really miss the physical buttons. I'm not a fan of having to move your finger off of the bezel and over the screen in order to tap, in order to, or swipe, in order to page forward. And on the Voyage, it's got this like haptic thing where you squeeze the page forward and it makes a little bump. But it's not, you know, a physical button thing is, it's better that way. And one of the interesting things about this Kindle's industrial design is that the bezel is bigger on the button side. And I think that's actually good because what you want your fingers to rest on the page turn button. You also don't want it to be that if you slightly move your finger, you hit the touch screen and advance the page by accident, which happens on the Voyage. So they're learning some lessons here too. So anyway, I'm going to get one. Whether I'm going to keep it, I don't know, but I ordered it because I figure at the very least I want to write about it. So I promise I'll say more about this category that I just said nobody cares about and people think is lame, but I think it's interesting. So, you know, whatever. I wrote a thing earlier this week that was a short little thing that it just struck me while I was traveling and I wanted to mention it, which is the stuff that we do that we don't realize is being kept in a database. And I don't mean in a scary way, although you could take it that way if you wanted. But like, you know, I don't know if you do this. Every time I travel, we end up having these conversations that are like, and maybe you do this with your family where you've got a history of travel with them. Like, when did we go there? You know, who was there? When was the last time we were here? We were asking, like, when was the last time all four of us got on an airplane together? Because it's been a while that the whole family flew somewhere and we flew to Phoenix. And I realized my iCloud photo library can give me the answers to all of those questions because for the last few years, I've been taking geotagged photos and they're all synced now to iCloud photo library and it's searchable by location. And so I was very quickly able to determine when the last time we were all in Arizona was, and when the last time we flew was, and when did we take that trip to Hawaii. I could answer all those questions in the Photos app, of all places. That is where my personal travel information lives. It also struck me that that would be an interesting app. Maybe this app already exists. It's an app that looks at your photo library and the locations and does like a little travel log database where you could very quickly see all the places you've been. But I don't know if such a thing exists.
Well, it's also interesting. So I don't know. Have you ever used the Google Photos app on iOS?
I haven't on iOS. I've used the web app, but I haven't used the iOS app.
Well, on the iOS app, at least, I don't know if this is available on the web too. And this is via Lex Friedman, who I know is a fan of it. It's pretty cool because Google actually applies a lot of the image processing algorithms that it uses for Google image search. So you can search your own photos with things like, I just searched mine on there because I've been using it a little bit for like hat.
Oh, yeah.
And it shows me pictures with hats in it. And I'm like,
yeah, that works on the web interface too.
Yeah, that's, to me, that is incredible. And so much more, like, I love what Apple does, and you're totally right that it's great to be able to pull that up, but in some ways they don't go far enough because that's not really their forte. And Google is really good at search, right? Like, that is one of their core competencies. So it's super cool that, like, if I don't remember where or when something happened, but I remember, oh, I took a picture of this funny sign the other day or something like that, it's cool to be able to search for that in sort of a metadata sense without, like, right, that's information they're figuring out. They have some sort of algorithm processing it and trying to figure out sort of a semantic meaning for things, which is, when you think about it, it's something that we use every day, things like Google Image Search, or at least I do. But when you think about that, some of those, that's a hard problem in many ways, especially when applied to your own photos. If you're looking at photos on the web and you're searching, you can search metadata, you can search the page that it's on and things like that, right? But on your own photos, which are presumably, you know, you didn't tag your photo with hat when you put it in, right? So being able to sort of search for abstract terms and be like, oh, show me all the pictures of dogs is pretty cool.
Yeah, I just searched my very limited photo library for ball. And I got like a picture of a football player, a picture in my own library, a picture of my son playing baseball, a picture of my son's birthday party where we went bowling and kids holding bowling balls. That's pretty,
I mean, it's like somewhat creepy, but also super cool.
Yeah. A picture of my daughter holding a ball.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty
and
crazy.
I think that's fascinating to me just because of its ability to be very abstract about that information. So like, that's super useful, honestly. And I don't know if Apple will integrate something like that in the future, but I don't know. Like, they used to, so there is still some facility for like people's faces, right? Like, is that still, that's still a feature in Photos on the Mac?
On the Mac only.
Because it doesn't sync back to iOS?
It syncs the names, basically, but not the photo recognition, not the face recognition database. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you've got a person's name and you search for that person on your phone, you will find them. But it can't, like, add new photos in on your phone and scan them and find out whose face it is.
Right, right. So, I mean, that is something that is also useful, right? Because if you want to see all the pictures of, say, your daughter or some other family member or a friend or something like that, it is nice to be able to quickly pull all of that up.
Yeah, and that works pretty well, actually.
Yeah.
And actually, Google's, I would say Google's location stuff is not as good as Apple's necessarily.
Hmm.
It's okay, but it also pulled up some false positives, which I'm not quite sure why that is, since those were geotagged photos and they're geotagged not in the place that it thinks they are. So that seems like there's some sort of error there. But anyway, I mean, we all have data, and it's just, you don't think of the photos you take as being part of this kind of repository of information, but every one of them is a time stamp, date stamped, and geotagged record of where you were.
Right.
And there are, you know, it's not just, you know, for browsing for a picture. It's also going to answer your question of, when did we last go to X? Assuming it was someplace where you took a picture with your phone, which these days is everywhere.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about that the other day in terms of, like, you know, we talk a lot about functionality that's sort of coalesced here. And, you know, when I travel, if I don't need to be doing work, you know, I certainly don't bring my MacBook, and I think about how much is done with that, with just my phone, and it is my camera. I don't remember the last time I was cleaning out some of my office as per some of our discussions on Clockwise more recently, and came across both my SLR and my point and shoot camera and was like, huh, these are both pretty dusty.
Yeah.
And I feel bad because the SLR is still pretty nice and takes nice pictures, but I don't remember the last time I used it because it's just not something that comes up that often.
Yeah, I have a really nice SLR, and I very rarely shoot. I shoot a bunch of the pictures for Six Colors with my SLR because it's right here. And so, you know, any of those pictures where there's like an iPad sitting on my table or on my kitchen counter or on the bench in my living room, and if you've been reading the site, you know what those pictures are. There's a lot of wood. Mm-hmm. It's probably from my house. All of those are done with my Rebel SLR. Those are fine. But do I take it out into the world a lot? Well, you know, no. When we did our driving trip last summer, we didn't bring the SLR at all because it's big, and also, you know, I didn't want to. I still have those feelings of like I don't want to leave it in the car, where it could get stolen. But at the same time, I don't really want to carry it with me everywhere. And you know, my phone fits in my pocket; it's super easy. So we left it behind, and I don't. You know, our photos are not as good, but they're still pretty good.
Yeah. No, I agree.
So I feel bad.
I have
about it.
Very few complaints about using my iPhone's camera, and they just seem to keep getting better.
Yeah, yeah. What else? What else going on? You working on a Macworld column this week?
I turned mine in just shortly before we recorded this. Fortunately,
sometimes it's hard when you write a column every week. You got to think of something every week. Something
I'm coming up on a full year of that, and it was like, my God, I've come up with a year's worth of columns.
I know. We used to joke about the monthly columns from monthly columnists, where they would have 12 columns and only 8 of them would be any good. And now it's like, and now we do 52 of them.
I think I'm going to come out to a little around 50 for the year. I missed a week or two here and there, but yeah, still that's a lot.
It's a lot of columns. Yeah, well, so mine this week is already up as we record this. And it's a wish list item that I almost wrote for Six Colors, and then I realized, no, this is probably a good piece for Macworld. And it's an iOS wish list item about support for storage devices. Because like iOS now has, Apple relented, right? I don't want to say for certain that this is a Scott Forstall thing, but... it's one in the list of things that we could say seem to be taboo in iOS that are no longer taboo, which is the idea that you would go pick a file from somewhere to open it or where to save it. And with iCloud Drive and with the addition of the document management managers, where you've got the ability to plug in Dropbox or OneDrive or Box or a lot, you know, any of these others in addition to just iCloud Drive that are these cloud storage systems, you basically have a file, an open and save picker in the apps that support this iOS standard. You're able to pick files and open them. And the thing that I realized the other week when I was recording something remotely, and I only had iOS devices with me, is I was recording to a device, a recorder that did USB, and it also recorded on to an SD card. And I have a USB adapter for my iPad and iPhone, and I have an SD card adapter for my iPad and my iPhone. So I've got, either way, I'm covered, right?
Right.
Except it doesn't work because iOS does not see connected storage as anything other than a potential place to import photos.
Right.
And now that we got a file picker for these cloud services, it seems like, and there are issues, but it seems to me like this is something iOS needs to do, especially since there are iPad Pros and this is a product that we're supposed to take seriously to do serious work. It's like, you know, not everybody needs it, but it's like sometimes you need to plug something in and get a file off of a device, a USB stick, a hard drive, an SD card, or a server. Right? Where Phil Schiller gets up on stage and says, oh, you can use this with a USB Ethernet adapter and get on your private network. Great. Can you connect to the private servers on your private network? No, you can't. Because, I mean, if you've got an app like GoodReader, you can add like a file server into the app and then connect to it and then copy it into the app and then share it out. But that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the system should let you attach storage or connect to a server and pick a file and bring it in. And it, you know, we're very close. I'm not asking also for the iPad to have like, or the iPhone to have a hard drive, like hard drive icon somewhere and you go through, right? Although you could argue iCloud Drive already is that. It syncs.
Yeah.
it syncs, but in the end, it gives you a space where you can save and open stuff. So we're already there.
And you have all the folder iconography and metaphors,
yeah, it's
right?
All, like it's all there. It's not mandatory, right? But it's there if you need it. And I feel like that's where they're going with a lot of this pro stuff is, you know, they want to make it available for people who need it. And that's not the same as making it mandatory. Just like the pencil is not mandatory. That's why they didn't blow it by releasing it. It's right. there if you want to use it. And so it just struck me like, okay, I've got an iPad Pro. I've got this professional audio recorder. I'm going to go in the field. I'm going to record some audio. And then I need to connect that and edit it on my iPad and send it back and post it as a podcast, let's say. What's the one thing that falls apart in that entire thing? It's the fact that the iPad can't read the card. Just can't do it. I mean, it can read it and find all the photos on it, but it can't read the audio files because the system just it's like, I don't know what storage is. I don't understand it.
So just out of curiosity, and again, this is not to say they shouldn't do any of this. I'm curious, would like something like an iFi card with the built-in Wi-Fi on that like obviate that problem?
Well,
but you, I mean, I know you'd have to go get especially, this is not sort of a solution.
The iFi card,
I'm just kind of curious if that's a workaround.
Like an iFi card is for transferring photos, right? So it doesn't. It's
okay,
not,
it still shows up as a photo thing.
It would be the same. What the iFi cards do is basically how the iPads treat external storage devices, which is all I'm really looking for is photos and videos to import. Which, you know, but
it's
what
a weird
if you're,
holdover, right?
I mean, taking it out of my silly audio realm, you know, if somebody hands you a USB stick with the PowerPoint presentation on it, and you've got PowerPoint on your iPad Pro, what do? The answer is you find a computer.
Yeah.
Because you can't bring that in. And that's dumb. That's just dumb. So I know there are issues because, you know, cloud storage, you can always like say, well, it's cached and then it's going to sync and the truth is going to be up on the server. And with a personal storage device, that's not necessarily the case. You may unplug it and never see it again. And so it probably needs to change the behavior a little bit. You probably want to copy things off of it and save them locally. You know, or treat them as little temporary clouds where you edit it. And then when, you know, and if it's still connected or the next time you connect it, it syncs it back to the device. I don't know. There's some complexity there. I can see why Apple hasn't done it up to now, but it feels like now's the time to
do this.
Well,
you know, it's funny because in some, you know, they use the metaphor a lot of let's skate to where the puck is going to be instead of where the puck is. And sometimes I feel like you overskate the puck. Where it's, you know, in the future, everything will be on the server, right? Like everything will be in the cloud. Everything will be network accessible. And the answer is, I mean, A, maybe in the future, 99% of things will be network accessible. But in the present, where we all live, not everything is. I think of the same, the MacBook One as sort of solving, having the same issue, right? Like, oh, you only need one port because in the future, you don't need to plug anything into your Mac. And the answer is, again, we do not live in the future.
Yeah.
We live in the present where that's not really useful or, you know, sort of feasible in day-to-day life.
Right. What's my solution for my multi-track audio thing, right? It's like I've got this great piece of software or hardware that records up to 6 microphones as individual audio tracks, and my iPad has great software on it to edit it. But, you know, what... There's no, you know, the cloud doesn't impact that at all. Like it doesn't work on the cloud. It's recording to a memory card. And then where does the memory card go? At this point, it's into a computer is the only answer. Like some of the iTunes stuff where Apple will occasionally on iOS throw up a thing that says, you need to go to your computer and open iTunes and go to my account. It's like, really? I need to go to my computer now? What if I don't have a computer? But every now and then you run into one of those walls where you're like, oh, it's not.
Apple's worked very hard to remove those over the years, right?
Yes.
Because, I mean, think back to the original iPhone, which you had to use a computer for more or less.
Absolutely. For years, you had to use a computer. Untethered use of iOS devices is not a, you know, was not there for what, 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, it was iOS 5, I want to say, before they actually got into like sort of, hey, you can set up your device on the device. That was revolutionary at that point. And so I think you're right. We're still sort of snipping off those last, you know, pieces of functionality that we still need, you know, different devices for, but we're not quite there yet. It wouldn't surprise me really if iOS 10 came out with support for that kind of thing. And then third-party developers, you know, need to integrate some of that stuff too. I always think about, so there's that, the I don't remember what they call it. It's not like location manager, but it's the thing that lets you access other cloud services through iOS's standard sort of file dialog box. So like if you go into like iWork or something like that and create a new document, you can like create it, you can store it in iCloud Drive, and then other devices, other services or apps can register as like, I'm a file destination, yeah. like Transmit or OneDrive or stuff
exactly.
like that. The thing that frustrates me is that the one app that does not seem to support that is Dropbox. They don't use Apple's standard service yeah. for some
bizarre
reason. I had
to put in a little parenthetical in there that Dropbox doesn't do this, and
I don't get why.
I wonder if there's a technical reason to the way that Dropbox is implemented, but it kills me because like I've got some apps where I write that will work with Dropbox, but the way I need to do it is I need to create a file on my Mac basically, and then if I open that in the app on the iPad, then when I edit it, it syncs back to Dropbox.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't create a new file
right.
and work with it on Dropbox. It's just dumb. It's dumb.
I don't understand why that is, if it's a political decision or a technological decision. Dropbox does have... It's implemented its own like extensions essentially for Actions or Share Sheets and stuff like that that let you save a file to Dropbox. So like, for example, if you're in the Photos app, you can use the action to save file from... Wow, Siri decided to go off there for no particular reason. Mm. You can save a file using the action menu, but it's weird because it's not standardized, right? Like, I went looking in the location, cloud storage manager thing, because I was like, oh, surely I will be able to dump this into Dropbox from there. And the answer is no, it's somewhere else. So, yeah.
They're working on it.
Hopefully. Fingers crossed. Dropbox, if you're listening.
Yeah. Well, so we got another week. This one's almost over. Good Lord. But, there's another week around the corner. Work will be commencing on the April Six Colors magazine. Mm-hmm. It's now that my travel is done, I feel like I'm ready to move on to do that. I don't know what else is going on. We're waiting. I'm hoping that there'll be new Macs at some point announced, but we just haven't heard that
yeah, I don't,
yet. So
we're also missing we have not yet, although this is still a little bit early prior to past years, gotten a official WWDC announcement either.
Right. Although, everybody seems to know when it is.
Yeah.
But until Apple says that it is,
they've been slipping that to like late April. I think 1 year was announced on like my birthday, was just still a couple weeks away.
Yeah.
Happy
birthday, Dan.
I had to call my credit card company today, and the service rep said happy birthday when they hang up, and I was like, okay, thanks.
Not yet, I guess.
You're 2 weeks early, but sure.
Yeah. Just in case I forget, remember I told you now.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks to everybody out there for subscribing to Six Colors. As always, we really appreciate it. It helps us keep the lights on. We will be working on the next magazine issue. And, of course, we'll be back with another Secret Podcast. So thanks, everybody. Bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.